KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
Did you know that the Pilgrims attempted communism but rejected it? How about they fled to America to escape governmental mandates? Does that sound like today? Well, on this Encounter, we're going to delve a little bit into Thanksgiving, learn a little bit more about Squanto and the pirates. But these two issues will be a major part of our interview. And then we'll talk about William J. Federer coming to do a tour in our area soon. So you won't want to miss any part of this show. I'm Judy Redlick. William J. Federer is my guest. I call him the walking American history book, but he's also a great author and speaker. Bill, welcome to Encounter.
Judy, great to be with you.
It's Thanksgiving, Bill. Isn't that a great time of the year? Can you share with our audience about Thanksgiving and how it first began?
Sure. Well, we have to go back to what was going on in Europe, and you had the Reformation start in 1517 with Martin Luther, and then in 1529, 100,000 Muslim Turks surrounded Vienna, Austria, under Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. People forget that Islam conquered North Africa, which used to be completely Christian. There were 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa in the 7th century. St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage until the Umayyad Muslims conquered them. And then they invaded Spain in the year 711, conquered it in 10 years. They're stopped outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD. And then they conquer the Holy Land. Syria used to be Christian. Matter of fact, the name Christian was first used in Syria. Turkey used to be Christian. Matter of fact, all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were wiped out. And then when they conquered Constantinople in 1453, it cut off the land routes to India. And that's when Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. But finally, they conquered Eastern Europe, and by 1529, 100,000 Muslims are at the gates of Vienna. And the Holy Roman Emperor is the Catholic King of Spain, Charles V, and he tries to do two things. He tries to smash the Reformation, and he tries to stop the Islamic invasion. He cannot do both, so in 1555, he makes a deal with the Protestants. It's called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. And in it is a little Latin phrase that had enormous repercussions. The phrase was, cuius regio ius religio, which means whose is the reign, his is the religion. So, Protestant king, believe whatever you want in your kingdom. Let's just work together against this Islamic invasion because they sort of want to kill us all. And it worked, but in the next century, different kings believed different things. So Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran. Switzerland, Calvinist. Scotland, Presbyterian. Holland, Dutch Reformed. England, Anglican. And, of course, Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland stayed Catholic.
But
it was one denomination per country. And if you did not believe the way your king did, it was considered treason. So there's this mass migration of people shifting around Europe for conscience sake, and those are the ones that spilled over and founded colonies in America. And if we focus on England, that's where the pilgrim story comes in, and if you like, I can get to that.
Sure.
So the King Henry VIII was originally Catholic, and he was married to the daughter of the King of Spain, but after 18 years, she does not have a son. So Henry decides to divorce her. The Pope won't recognize the divorce because she is, after all, the daughter of the most powerful guy in the world, and the King of Spain had sent his army to Rome and imprisoned the Pope for 6 months in 1527. So he says no to the divorce, but Henry says, you know what, I'm far enough away from Rome, I'm going to declare myself my own pope. He starts the Church of England, puts himself on as the head, goes on to have six wives, and their fates were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. Henry VIII was not a really nice guy to be married to. His advisor suggested if he's serious about breaking from Rome, he needs to stop using the Latin Bible. Get himself an English Bible. The German princes have Martin Luther's German Bible that helped them to break away. He needs an English Bible. Well, it just so happens that Henry VIII had William Tyndale burnt at the stake a few years earlier for translating the Bible into English. William Tyndale's last words were, "Lord, open the King of England's eyes." And now it's this divorce, and the king wants an English Bible. And so they basically take Tyndale's work, polish it up, call it the Great Bible, and Henry orders a copy of it put in every church in England.
How God opened his eyes. Amazing.
And then Henry dusts his hands and says, "That's it. We've broken from Rome. We don't need a Latin Bible anymore. We got an English Bible." But something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what's in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives and claiming to be the head of Christ's church. And so a group starts in England that wants to purify the Church of England, and they're nicknamed Puritans. The king doesn't think he needs any purifying. He thinks he's fine just the way he is, so he doesn't like Puritans. There's another group that said it's beyond hope of purifying. We are simply going to separate ourselves. So they call themselves separatists. We call them pilgrims. Some of them are Baptists. Some of them are Congregationalists. Later, some of them are Quakers. But they're ones that they don't like the king ruling their lives with mandates. So the king's attitude was, yes, you can read the Bible in your own language, but no, you still can't believe whatever you want. You got to believe what I tell you to believe. And so he passes the Act of Uniformity of Common Prayer. You do not make up prayers because you could make up one that's wrong. So we've written all the prayers down in a book. You just open it to the page and read it, right? Baptism, wedding, funeral, whatever. And you cannot preach within 5 miles of a town by mandate of the king. If you do, you've broken the 5-mile act and you'll be arrested and imprisoned.
So many laws and mandates.
There's another mandate called the Conventicle Act. And if you're caught with a Bible study with more than 5 people and you've not gotten pre-approval of the government for it, you're criminals. They'll bust into the Bible study and drag you off. And that's what happened to John Bunyan. He's being drug off. He yells out, "Better to be persecuted than be the persecutor." He spends 12 years in prison, and that's when he writes Pilgrim's Progress.
But when
they arrest you, they bring you before the Star Chamber. It's a government room with stars on the ceiling, and they would twist your arm and brand your face as a heretic and cut off your ear and cut your nose in half, and it was serious. They put you in prison, and they would not feed you. The cell windows were open to the weather, and you'd be shivering in there. One story is a Baptist named John Merton, and he was writing pamphlets, and the king didn't like the pamphlets, and so he's in prison. Well, they don't feed you in the British prison. You have to have some friend that misses you and brings you money or food. If he brings you money, you can bribe the guard to put you in the cell where nobody's dying of smallpox. But his friend brings him a bottle of milk, and instead of a cork, it has a wad of paper. And when the guard's not around, he unfolds the paper, takes a splinter, dips it in the milk, and he writes out his pamphlets. The milk dries, it's clear. He folds it up, puts it in the empty bottle. The guard takes it, his friend takes it, and brings it home and unfolds it and holds it above a candle, just high enough so the heat of the candle turns the milk brown. And they can read what he wrote, and they typeset it and print it, and the government's like, how is he getting these pamphlets written?
Wow, love it. Love it. So how do we get to Thanksgiving from this, when the pilgrims come to America?
So the pilgrims, they sell their property and arrange for a ship to take them to Holland. And right before they take off, the captain robs them, turns them over to the police, they're put in prison. Another group of these pilgrim separatists arrange for a Dutch ship to come along the coast, and they're going to have little rowboats and hurry up and row out and get on the ship and sail away. But the pilgrims show up a day early, and the boat's rocking in the water, the kids are getting sick, and the wives say, "Can we just wait on shore?" And the men say, "Okay." And then the Dutch ship comes, and the men row out, they're stowing everything on the ship, and someone snitched. The British come over the hill, capture the women and children. And the Dutch captain says, "I don't have an army," and he pulls anchor and sails away with the men. You can imagine those wives and children watching that boat getting smaller and smaller until it disappears over the horizon. For 2 years, they pass those women and children from one court in England to another. Finally, a judge says, "You really didn't do anything wrong. Go home." They go, "Duh, we sold our homes." So just to get them out of their hair, they put them on a boat, sent them to Holland, and they found out where their husbands were, and they were reunited. But they're in Holland for 12 years, and Spain threatens to attack. It was an 80-year war of independence for Holland to break away from Spain. And so these pilgrim separatists decide they're going to flee to the New World. Originally, they were going to go to Guyana in South America. They heard of the Perpetual Spring. But then they heard of the Spanish wiping out the French Protestant settlement in Fort Caroline around Jacksonville, Florida. And so they decided to go to Jamestown. And so they're on their boat. It leaks. They got to go back to England, get it fixed. It leaks again. They got to go back. Finally, they swap out for the Mayflower. Now they've wasted time and eaten through food, and it's stormy in the North Atlantic, and they get blown off course. And they land 500 miles away from Jamestown. And the captain tries going down the coast to Cape Cod, but the sand goes out really far. They call them shoals. You can be a quarter mile off the coast, and your boat can get stuck in, you know, 6 feet water with the sand. And in storms, you can get, you know, the waves can smash your boat to pieces. And so the pilgrims almost sink. The captain says, forget Jamestown, goes back to Cape Cod and says, everyone off the boat. And they say, well, we have a problem. There's no king-appointed person in our group. The whole world's ruled by kings, and there's no king. Who's going to be in charge of us?
Yeah.
They do something unique. They give themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact. We, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, covenant ourselves together to form a civil body politic, to enact just and equal laws as shall be thought most necessary, unto which we promise all due submission. Simple, revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by kings and sultans and maharajas and emperors and Russian czars and African chieftains, it's ruled bottom-up by we. It's a polarity change in the flow of power. In the womb of this little Mayflower is the conception of the child of liberty. And this becomes the model for the other New England colonies and eventually the U.S. Constitution, which starts off how? We the people.
Wow. Anyway, amazing, such amazing stories of bravery and just taking on themselves to be different so that freedom might be had. We're talking with Bill Federer, giving you a little history about how America came to be in Thanksgiving. Bill, we're going to come back and you can share a little more about Squanto and some of the things that happened. And also how they tried communism but rejected it, and some of the things as they correlate today. Bill is coming to the greater St. Louis area. We'll hear more about that too. I'm Judy Redlick. We'll be right back. This is Encounter.
Friends, this is Rich Bott reminding you to pray for America in daily corporate prayer. Almost 400 years ago, the Pilgrims began an annual celebration we know as Thanksgiving. Their second year in America, a serious drought threatened their crops. Even the natives were surprised at the lack of rain. Pilgrim Edward Winslow set aside a day to lead the people in fasting and prayer. By the end of the day, clouds gathered, and the next morning the Pilgrims awoke to showers that lasted 14 days. Winslow noted that even the natives were in awe of the goodness of God, all because they were willing to humble themselves and pray. Let's return America to the fundamental Christian principles, standards, and values of our founding fathers. Join with thousands of Americans praying every day in corporate prayer for the United States of America. This Thanksgiving prayer message is courtesy of a concerned American and loving grandmother.
I'm Judy Redlick. This is Encounter. This is our Thanksgiving show. Do you realize that when they came over, all the hardships they went through, they got separated from their wives, so many hardships, but they changed the government from the bottom up. And that's what gave us, and it still gives us, our freedom today. They put the Constitution together, and it was liberty for those people who came over from England. William J. Federer is my guest. I'm Judy Redlick. And Bill, then Squanto. How did Squanto play such a major role in this new colony?
Yeah, this is one of the exciting stories, that the Pilgrims were religious and they were moral, but others were not. And so you had Columbus discover the New World, and then shortly followed by the Spaniards who wanted gold, and then you had the Dutch and French and English pirates that were robbing the Spanish gold, and so they were not really moral type motivations. And sometimes they would capture people and make them slaves. And then they would go along the coast of America, lure some unsuspecting Indians on their boat, and then lock them below deck, and then take them over to Malaga, Spain, sell them into slavery. And that's what happened to Squanto. And the story is that when the monks heard that these Native Americans were being sold, they caused such a ruckus that they were not sold, and they were given into the custody of these monks who later freed them. And then that's what happened to Squanto. And so he hitchhiked his way across Europe, makes his way to England. He's there for years. He learns the language. He's working different jobs. He finally finds some business interests in Newfoundland, and he gets a job as an interpreter and a guide, and he's able to get there. And then he finds another business where they'll sort of a fishing shipping, and they agree to drop him off at Cape Cod. And he lands only to find that his entire tribe had died. A plague swept through the area. William Bradford writes in the history of the Plymouth settlement that a few years earlier, a French ship had shipwrecked off of Cape Cod. The sailors got ashore. The Indians never left watching them and dogging them till they got the advantage, until they killed them all but three or four, whom they sent from one chieftain to another, who made sport with them, using them worse than slaves. Evidently, one of them had an illness, and the Indians did not have immunity, wipes out the whole tribe. So as tragic as it was for Squanto to be captured, had he not been kidnapped, he most certainly would have died in the plague. Anyway, so sometimes in our lives, bad things happen, and we don't know why. But it turned out that he was made the savior, so to speak, of these pilgrims. So half the pilgrims died the first winter. They would not have survived a second year. And Squanto comes out of the woods and speaks to them in perfect English. You can just imagine, oh, you guys from London? Yeah, I used to live there. You know, oh, yeah, St. Paul's Chapel, the pub on Wharf Street, or, I mean, all this stuff. And then he goes, oh, this place, I grew up here. I know this place like the back of my hand. And over the hills of spring, he taught them how to go down to the riverbank, take off their shoes and squeegee in the mud and catch eels and clams and then catch fish. They said, we tried that. He goes, no, these are salmon. They spawn. You can look at the moon. You can tell it's getting ready. And they harvested fish. And then they tried to plant corn, and they couldn't. He says, well, you got to take a fish and lay it over the kernel of corn and guard it for 2 weeks to keep the wolves away. And then the fish decomposes and it has a nice stalk of corn with the fertilizer. And then he taught him how to take the corn, put it in a pot, shake it over a fire, and make popcorn. And then he taught him how to catch beaver. William Bradford says, neither was there a man among them who had ever seen a beaver skin till instructed by Squanto. So William Bradford says that Squanto was a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. He was most instrumental in being their interpreter, putting them on good terms with the other Indian tribes. And so that was the setting for the first Thanksgiving. All right, the Indians brought their turkey and their deer, and the pilgrims had their puddings and cranberries. At the end of the day, the pilgrims roll up in their blanket and go to sleep. And the next day, they're still there, and Thanksgiving goes on for a second day. And then at the end of the day, they roll up in their blankets, and the next goes on for a third day. And this was just an important point that Squanto was sort of like Joseph's brother sold him into slavery.
Yeah.
But then he ended up being the one to provide for all of his brothers. And Squanto had been sold into slavery, yet he's the one who was able to provide and take care of these pilgrims. And William Bradford says a couple years later, they're exploring around the Cape, and they're in their boat, little rowboat, and it starts pouring down freezing rain. And the waves get really rough. And so they put in an island, and they're like soaked and shivering. They build a little lean-to. And he says, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, which the Indians take for a symptom of death. He bequeathed several of his belongings to his English friends, and then he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him, that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven. Well, the Englishmen he was with were the pilgrims, and the pilgrims were strong Christians. And he basically witnessed their life, and he goes, I want to go to your God. And so I believe that Governor Bradford led him in the prayer of salvation. But it's just a fascinating story of this life
that
squadron that rescued the pilgrims.
Bill Federer is going to be in the area. Concerned Women for America of Missouri is having him come to do a 7 Missouri city tour from the 2nd of December through the 6th of December. And so that's Concerned Women for America of Missouri. You can look it up on your internet. Let me give you a phone number if you're interested in learning more about this tour. Bill Federer is a wealth of information, and the phone number is 314-608-0168. That's 314-608-0168. Bill, what are you going to be talking about there on this 7-city tour coming up soon?
Well, I did a book on the history of socialism, and it is something that young people are enamored by. But, you know, we're on the topic of the pilgrims. The pilgrims tried socialism. You said, really? Yeah, they were originally a company colony. They didn't have money for their boat ride. So they approached some investors in England who said, we'll give you the money. We expect you to somehow pay us back, and we're going to write the bylaws for this company. And the bylaws said everything would be owned in common. That all these pilgrims, everything gained by cooking, hunting, fishing, trading shall go into ye common stock. And everyone's livelihood shall come out of ye common stock. And William Bradford said they tried it for a couple of years, almost starved to death. He says that the young men objected to doing twice as much work as the old guy, but got paid the same. And the old guy considered it a dishonor to be ranked in labor with the humbler and younger ones. And the women objected to having to wash other men's clothes. Mm. And he said nobody wanted to go out and plant, right? You have husbands dying and wives dying and children dying. Nobody. And he said that we had to come up with a fitter plan. And so it was decided that every family would be assigned their own plot of land. He goes, this made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them to plant corn. While before, they would have alleged weakness and inability, and to have forced them would have been considered great oppression. And so they switched from company to covenant. So instead of you having all your stuff forcibly taken away and redistributed, you get to keep your own stuff, and then you can be moved upon in your heart to be charitable and give away some as you feel so led. And so the people say, well, wasn't the early church socialist? No, the early church was the early church. Socialism is counterfeit early church. And the difference is between the word voluntary and involuntary, right? So the early believers voluntarily sold their property, and they laid the money at the feet of Pilate for the church to distribute. They didn't have their land taken away, and they were forced to lay the money at the feet of Pilate for the Roman government to redistribute. So when the children of Israel went into the promised land, God gave them property, each family. If you own property, you can accumulate stuff.
And you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, and then you can be moved upon in your heart to give away some of your stuff. That is called charity. Well, socialism is you don't own anything. The government takes it all away. And the person that's receiving it, they don't know whose pocket that was taken out of. And they go from not being grateful to feeling bad about themselves, and they want to channel that bad feeling somewhere. They end up hating the very government giving them free stuff. They end up despising the government. And so it's a very important concept to understand that God entrusts you with physical things, with blessings, and then you're moved upon to give away some of it.
To give away.
But Karl Marx says communism can be summed up in one sentence, abolition of private property. If you don't own any property, how can you give anything away? What are you going to steal from somebody else and now you're a thief? No, God entrusts you with stuff, and then he allows you the freedom to be moved upon in your heart to give away some of your stuff.
Concerned Women for America of Missouri is hosting Bill Federer on a 7-city tour coming up soon, December 2nd through the 6th. I'm going to give you a phone number, but you can also look at their website, Concerned Women for America of Missouri, or you can call 314-608-0168. That's 314-608-0168 to find out where Bill's going to be the 2nd through the 6th of December. So don't delay, because Bill's going to be talking about his new book and really explain more of the ins and outs about socialism. Bill, what's your new book called?
It's called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control.
And wouldn't that help us for today as we ponder how America is going, in what direction, and maybe give us some insights on what we can do to turn the tide around? Hey, I'm Judy Redlich. Bill, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been amazing, and I hope you've enjoyed this Thanksgiving event special as much as I have, learning the stories of our forefathers and some of the great heroism that they endured so that we could be America today. Let's pray for our country and ask the Lord to help us to show insights, and most of all, that revival might hit so that those people who are not serving the Lord might suddenly have their eyes opened to see what God has in store. Concerned Women for America of Missouri tour. Bill Federer is the speaker at this tour. 7 Missouri cities, December 2nd through the 6th. 314-608-0168 is the phone number to learn more. Or you can look at their website, Concerned Women for America of Missouri. Bill, thank you so much for being my guest today on Encounter and doing your homework.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.
I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com. That's jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.